The following programme is an unedited live recording of the Great Ocean Road Summit hosted by Sarah Henderson, Federal MP for Corangamite, held at the Apollo Bay Bowls Club on the 17th of March. Apollo Bay Radio, Apollo Bay Community website and all their volunteers do not endorse the views expressed in this live unedited recording. It has been recorded and replayed as a public community service for those unable to attend.
Well, good evening, everyone. And a very, very warm welcome. My name is Sarah Henderson, the Federal Member for Corangamite and your local member, and I want to welcome you all here for our Apollo Bay Great Ocean Road Summit. Sitting up with me is John Gorman. John, as many of you would know, is the President of the Apollo Bay Chamber of Commerce. John also sits on our investment task force for the Jobs and Investment Fund. We are only one of 10 regions across Australia to have secured a $20 million fund. It's a Commonwealth fund, an election commitment we made that we've been able to deliver. And John is sitting on the task force. The task force plan is to, or their objective is to create an investment plan to guide the delivery of that funding. And John might be able to say a little bit more of that shortly. It's chaired by Jane Den Hollander, who's the Vice Chancellor of Deakin. But tonight, ladies and gentlemen, it's all about your feedback, your concerns, your ideas, and your priorities for this magnificent Great Ocean Road. Can I, before I say too much about what we're going to do tonight, can I just welcome Councillor Chris Potter, the Mayor of Colac Otway Shire. Where's Chris? Oh, there's Chris. Sue Wilkinson, the CEO, Joe McCracken, Councillor Joe McCracken, and Stephen Hart is here as well. We also have Joe Burley from the Great Ocean Road Tourism Board, and of course all of you are special in your own right. So thank you so much for being here. So just very briefly recapping, we are in the middle of rolling out a $50 million upgrade of the Great Ocean Road. Now, that program is still underway. We made that commitment back in 2013, matched by state funding. The Commonwealth delivered $25 million, matched by the state. And very proudly, last year, we announced another $25 million, which was announced actually as part of the Victorian Infrastructure Package by the Prime Minister, $10 million in April, and then another $15 million in the budget. And a number of months ago, this money was matched by the state, which was terrific. The state also announced another $53 million for a whole range of geotechnical works because, as we all know, particularly along the limestone cliffs and after what we've endured with the Christmas Day bushfires and the landslides, we know how vulnerable that road is and how much work is required to keep it up to scratch and to improve it. So we're about two-thirds of the way through the $50 million program that was announced back in 2013. And now our job as your local Commonwealth representative is to make sure that the next $50 million is spent wisely and goes to the important priority projects that you believe need attention. Now, just to make it very clear, the money for the road is ostensibly about the road, but I'm really pleased, even though Vic Roads couldn't be here tonight, I'm really pleased that Vic Roads is open to looking at some basic tourism infrastructure along the road. Things like car parking, better signage, even basic things like seating, picnic tables, all the things that we know we need to keep people here and to make sure that our economy thrives, because we recognise Apollo Bay, like a couple of other towns, but particularly Apollo Bay, is just so dependent on tourism to thrive all year round, not just in the summer months. So I'm going to be opening the floor up shortly because tonight's all about getting your feedback. I will then be incorporating that into a report which will go onto my website. It will be provided to Vic Roads and also to the Federal Infrastructure Minister, Darren Chester. We will be considering that before we sign off on the scope of works. So there's lots of information on my website about the work that's already been done. Nothing quite in central Apollo Bay, but there's been quite a lot of work done between here and Wye, Grey River, also Separation Creek Bridge has been rebuilt, Boggley Creek Bridge, there's been some resealing work at Lavers Hill, and around about 36, 37 million of the 50 has been spent. I'm going to briefly hand over to John. I'm going to ask John to say a few words about how Apollo Bay can play a really important part of this process. And I'll also ask John to talk about the his work on the task force as well. Apart from the $50 million and the $53 million from the state and the $20 million for the Investment and Jobs Fund, there's also another fund that's just closed called the Building Better Regions Fund. So there's two streams. The infrastructure stream has just closed, and there's also an in community investment stream. And I raise those because, again, for regional Australia, they are important funding opportunities. So if you are looking at opportunities, the community investment stream is really significant because the Commonwealth doesn't normally fund business cases and events. We tend to fund infrastructure, but this is quite a really quite exciting fund because it is broader than you'd ordinarily see from the Commonwealth. So I'm going to hand over to John. We're then going to watch a video, which is the Great Ocean Road Tourism Board's video, looking at some of the dynamics and the situation at the moment with tourism. And then I'm going to ask also Chris Potter to say a few words. And if the other councillors want to say something, I'd be very happy as well. We're going to keep this pretty short and sharp. I don't want this to... I mean, I'm conscious of time. You all need to get home for dinner. So we are going to race through and hopefully we will be finished around about 7:30. So could you now please welcome John Gorman.
Thank you very much. I first of all want to acknowledge Sarah. Sarah is an absolutely fantastic advocate for our area, and the whole thing with the money for the Great Ocean Road being, you know, 50 million and 50 million. Well, that really came from Sarah's efforts, without a shadow of a doubt, because she put up the fact that the 21st 25 would the Commonwealth match it. Well, they had to. Put up another 25, Commonwealth had to match it. And then the state, state matched it. My apologies. Let me get it the right way. And then the state ended up putting in another 53 million. So I think we've got about 30 or 35 million spent. We've got still a lot of money to be spent. But it is from that effort. And I actually came down, I know, and I'm not paid to do this, but I want to do it because I think Sarah deserves to get the recognition. I came down today along the Colac Road, and when I see that, I think of Sarah and her efforts. I actually think of a film clip where you nearly got run over when Tony Abbott was announcing the money. But that there are only a couple of things, but I do think we really appreciate the skill that you have and the advocacy you put federally for us. The issue, I'm going to be fairly brief. I think there's the issues of the road, not so much just the surface of the road, but obviously the sides of the road and both sides, because the landslip involved, you know, when we had that rain, massive amounts of landslips both on the seaside and on the inland side. And it really is a worry. And there's no doubt that the road's been neglected and taken for granted for many years. The second thing is obviously along the road is the infrastructure. There's a project that Vic Roads are working on as part of all this to look at the stopping areas, the viewing areas, the amenity, whether there's rubbish bins there, whether there's toilets there. That's something that has been worked on as part of this project. Further along the road, obviously the issues of the main areas like Apollo Bay, the amenity in terms of the infrastructure such as toilet facilities, foreshores generally, and a lot of these things are state responsibilities, not federal responsibilities. But nonetheless, there are things that need to be paying more attention to, because we are attracting a much growing number of tourists, in particular international tourists, in particular Chinese tourists, and that's going to keep growing, and it's putting a lot of strain on the resources. The other thing, as far as Sarah mentioned tourism, you know, we obviously need to, we've got such fantastic natural beauty, that's the big thing, but we also need things that are going to keep more of these international tourists staying, and staying in Apollo Bay, if you excuse the parochialism of this meeting, I suppose, and my role. And I think that's going to happen. There are a number of things on the drawing board. I won't mention them in particular because a number of them can't even be announced, but there are some incredibly exciting developments. The harbour project's been, you know, on the drawing boards for a long time, but it does seem to be moving along thanks to efforts from the Shire. But there are some other things that are happening that will be probably announced in the next few months, which are very exciting for the growth of tourism in Apollo Bay. But we need to keep working on it. So just in regard to my role with the Regional Jobs and Investment Program, firstly, before I get to that, the Building Better Regions, there is still the community investment stream is still open, closes on the 31st of March. If you haven't had a look at that, you can look at it on the I think it's infrastructure.gov.au, the Federal Department of Infrastructure site. The Regional Job and Investment Program, which is something that really Sarah influenced in getting $20 million for our region, is going to have three streams, which is business innovation, infrastructure and training. So for those I know, I'm talking to some and some have inputted to me some ideas, which I welcome and have been very constructive. But it'll probably be in about May that it'll be available. We're currently, as Sarah said, working on the bigger picture of the sort of key guideline, the strategic industries that will be a priority. And for my part, I will be particularly pushing tourism, as you can imagine, because that is the area that has got the opportunity to grow the benefits of Apollo Bay in particular, but the Great Ocean Road generally. But in terms of those things, if you think about them and look out and keep in touch, and there'll be an opportunity to get any project you've got considered as part of that further down the track. Thanks, Sarah.
John, thank you very much. I'm now going to ask Chris Potter to come up and say a few words. Just a very brief update. We're just about to start construction of the new mobile base station at Tenebrin. So that was a commitment that we made, and there's 18 being rolled across under our Black Spots program. So we know how important mobile reception is for everyone, and of course for the tourism industry. The NBN, does anyone... the NBN is very, very close to being available. So the NBN is moving. It's certainly moving in Colac. So that is being rapidly rolled out. And even I have to say, and it's great, we are being recorded on ABR, 3abr.org, 87.6 FM. But it is great that I'm very proud that we've also supported your local radio station with a bit of help getting your own licence from ACMA, and we even, under our Stronger Communities Fund, put some money into the audio desk, wasn't it, just to support your local radio station. The other big issue, of course, is TV reception, and while I know that it's still not perfect, there's been a lot of investment into improving TV reception, fixing the issues with King Island, moving on to a different frequency to improve the TV reception, which was pretty average up until fairly recently. So that's been terrific as well. I'd now like to welcome Chris Potter.
Thanks, Sarah. Welcome, everyone. Thank you very much for turning out tonight. And Sarah, I don't know if this type of forum has been held in Apollo Bay for a long time, but it's a testament to your commitment to this area that you are here tonight holding this forum. And I thank you very much. I encourage everyone to take the opportunity to put your views across, your wish list, if you want to put it like that, and have a meaningful and polite discussion with Sarah about this area. John's stolen some of my thunder, so I won't talk too long, but I can say that the Great Ocean Road has been neglected for years. All the local people know that. Council have been advocating for some time for money to be spent on it. First we have to get it up to a standard, and then we have to look at improving the infrastructure, and as John talked about, making it better for tourists and keeping tourists in the area. So thank you for your commitment to the Great Ocean Road. It's been badly needed, and we look forward to better facilities in this area. Council itself has advocated for what we have been terming a Great Ocean Road Authority to ensure that government money, Shire money, is spent in a coordinated way so that you get value for your money, more bang for your buck, so to speak. So we maintain that position because we want to make sure that government money, Shire money, is spent properly and get the best value for the community. So thanks again, Sarah, for organising this forum. It's fantastic, fantastic turnout, everyone, and please have your view.
Chris, thank you very much. One other thing that I just wanted to mention before we have a look at the video. Earlier this week, I was meeting with the Assistant Minister, Angus Taylor, who's the Assistant Minister for Digital Transformation and Cities, and we're looking at a regional city deal. So work has already, and we met with CEOs and mayors of local councils, as well as the Committee for Geelong and the Geelong Chamber of Commerce, but we've made it very clear, and a big focus of the meeting was on tourism. So again, we're looking at how we can drive that investment into the whole region. And there is, and around the table the other day, there was extraordinary excitement about the potential and to a large degree the untapped potential of the Great Ocean Road. So whether it's our Jobs and Investment Fund, whether it's building better regions, whether it's the Great Ocean Road upgrade or the city deal, there is an enormous focus on tourism, on exploiting that tourism dollar, because 5.5 million people travel the Great Ocean Road every year, and as we know, they don't stop and spend enough money. And on that note, we've also been focused on toilets, because we all know, and I know there are issues in Apollo Bay, unless there are good toilet facilities in a tourism precinct or region, tourists don't stop. And there's been lots of discussion about a toilet-led tourism revolution. Whether it's in Wye, whether it's in Kennet, which has got all sorts of challenges, here in Apollo Bay, further up the road where... not Lavers Hill, Glenair, around Glenair, and Castle Cove, where I know there are big challenges in Castle Cove. That's you. Fantastic. Even though I had a mental blank, it is really important. I've actually raised this with Darren Chester, who's our federal infrastructure minister, and he's so excited because he's been banging on about a toilet block infrastructure fund. But honestly, it's just so critical to tourism and to amenity and to people having a great experience when they visit a region. Joe, we're now going to have a look at the video. Thank you very much, Joe. Well done to the Great Ocean Road Regional Tourism Board for their work and their advocacy. The numbers are staggering and the potential even more so. I'm now going to open questions and open the floor up for your ideas and input. John reminded me of one important project that I hadn't mentioned, apart from the NBN, which I think is available to most parts of Apollo Bay now and coming online by way of NBN fixed wireless in Skeens Creek in October. But we have also, because I know one of the absolute bugbears, and this came about after we ran a number of community meetings, was the Apollo Bay Forest Road, which is very challenging. I met the local policeman who's just moved down from Footscray, Matt in Forest, and he was saying there's an accident there almost every weekend, mainly because of impatient drivers dealing with the fact there are no passing lanes or slow turnout lanes. And we've committed $5 million to that road. Again, it's very unusual for the Commonwealth to drive investment in state roads, but it was part of a $345 million rural and regional roads package. And I'm now pleased that the state has matched the funding, so $10 million for the Apollo Bay Forest Road, which is a really significant investment, which we think will make a big difference to your community. Now, Can I ask for some hands, some ideas, some inspiration, and some great proposals? If you could just state your name and where you're from, if you're from anywhere in particular, and we will be taking some detailed notes and incorporating your suggestions into our report.
Thank you, Sarah, for the opportunity. John Marin is my name. Sarah, you're right in identifying tourism as important to Apollo Bay. It does, in fact, underpin our economy here in Apollo Bay. And like many small communities on the Great Ocean Road, we're all vying for that tourism dollar. But anyone arriving in Apollo Bay today about midday would think we were very successful in attracting tourists, but they are, in fact, drive-through tourists. They don't stop. They're here for a toilet break and a quick lunch, and they're on their way again, all heading to the 12 Apostles. We need something more. We need to be able to offer a bit more depth to our tourist attractions in this region. And we have recently lost Mariners Falls Walk for reasons best known to the national parks. It doesn't look like it's going to be reopened. We need something in its place. Sarah, you and I have spoken in the past about the value of walks. And we recently spoke about the Three Capes Walk in Tasmania, mm-hmm. in southeast Tasmania. That has proven to be an absolutely huge success. It has far exceeded what the best estimates of anyone who was involved in that, so much so that they have now embarked on the further construction of that system of trials. They are now working on Cape Raoul trial. That is in fact being constructed by an Apollo Bay company. But they don't have to be these multi-million dollar trials, and it can be clearly demonstrated throughout Australia that there are many trials which are of 1, 2 or 3 hours or more of duration that are more than capable of attracting and holding tourists in this region. And one such project that's been pushed at the moment is the Apollo Bay to Skeddon's Creek Walk. And I believe that has merit. It is something that would hold people in Apollo Bay. It would in fact make it safer for bicycles and tourists who walk on that particular area. So what I'm asking you, Sarah, is are you prepared to support that walk? And if so, how do you propose to demonstrate that support?
John, thank you very much. And we have had some fantastic discussions about the work that you've been doing, because it's your company that's been doing the work on the Three Capes Walk. And there was a very big investment made by the Tasmanian government. It's a spectacular walk. It's down near Port Arthur. And I didn't get to it. I was hoping I might be able to actually visit it, but you probably do need to put some time aside. And in 12 months, I think it's $500 to do the walk. It's repaid already, and it's repaid its investment. And now, as we've heard, greater investment is continuing. So I think it's inspirational. And in fact, Paul Green from the Wye River Hotel first came to me about this idea about investing big in a major world-class walk, iconic, something that brings people from all around the world. Because, John, you're absolutely spot on. I've spoken to everyone about it. I've just been speaking to the Prime Minister's offices about it as well. So on the big picture walks, absolutely fundamental that we invest in tourism infrastructure, minor and major, which keeps people here and spending. I'm going to ask Paul to say something in a moment. I love the Wild Dog Creek to Skeens Creek walk. It's fabulous. I backed it in 2010 for an election commitment, but I didn't get up. It was in a different form back then, so we actually did make an election commitment. I was not able to get it over the line as an election commitment in 2013, because ordinarily the federal government has quite limited scope to invest in this sort of community-based infrastructure, and that's why the Building Better Regions Fund is so important, because it's a fund that provides funding of up to $10 million per project, and it really is game-changer type of stuff. So absolutely, John, as you know, I'm very inspired by the work that you've done, by the ideas that I've seen in this community, and by the bigger picture ideas for this whole region. And even the Prime Minister's main cities advisor, so she does a lot of the infrastructure advice work, her name is Alice Thompson, she was telling me that she drove down the Great Ocean Road with her two children and could not find a picnic table to sit and actually have lunch with her kids. So we recognise, and I've put out a number of media statements about it and I've been banging on about it, basic tourism infrastructure is so critical, and having the tourism infrastructure here to keep people spending so that we are not drive-through towns for those 5.5 million tourists is essential. I've just come, in fact, with John to have a look at a new project, a new proposal. I won't say too much about it, but it's very exciting. It's in Marengo. It's based around ecotourism. And we actually had a spontaneous meeting on the phone, didn't we, with one of the minister's advisors about supporting that project as well. So any idea, particularly one that where you've got the runs on the board as you have, John, obviously has enormous merit. I'm now going to ask Paul to say a few words.
Thank you, Sarah. My name's Paul Green. I'm the publican at Wye River. I am also a member of the Community Resilience Committee in Wye River. I was appointed by the Collacott Way Shire and the state government to assist in the rebuilding of Wye River after our fires. I'm also chair of the Tourism and Business Committee, and I've been speaking to Sarah regularly since the fires. Firstly, I want to thank Sarah. She came to Wye River immediately after the fires, stayed at the pub and paid for it, which was really good. She was there a couple of nights. So thanks for your support. Thank you also for making yourself... You've got a butt at the moment. Sarah, making yourself available in such an intimate setting to talk to us, the ordinary people. It's often very hard for us to get to our politicians. We feel like we're not being heard, so... Clearly, Sarah, you're listening to us, so thank you for that. I mentioned a project to Sarah, I don't know, a year or so ago. We were asked to come up with some projects to increase visitor numbers and night stays on the Great Ocean Road after the fires. Our committee has identified a number of projects, but the major one we have identified is that we would like someone to create a walk from Warren Ponds, from the railway station at Warren Ponds, through to the 12 Apostles and beyond. The reason for asking for that is that we think we can get the people from Melbourne, use public transport from the centre of Melbourne, get the train to Warren Ponds, and then walk from there, if they want, right through to the 12 Apostles and beyond. Already we obviously have the walk from Apollo Bay down there. We have a walk now from Torquay to Aries Inlet. There is a push to build a walk from Aries Inlet to Cumberland River. There's a lot of support in Lawn for that. There's also obviously the support locally to build the walk from Skeens Creek to Apollo Bay. We're missing that link in the middle with arguably two of the most outstanding features of the Great Ocean Road, and that's Cape Mount Defiance and Cape Patton. They are spectacular. We could hopefully build a walk that would be world-renowned, a couple of hundred kilometre long walk. The beauty of it is that clearly people walk, they then have to stay somewhere. They have to book accommodation, they have to eat and drink. We're perfectly set up for it. We have public transport running along. If you want to walk one day, catch the bus and go home. If you want to walk two, three, four, 5 days. Our towns are a perfect distance apart for those day-long walks. So we seek to continue your support, Sarah, and help us raise the profile of this project. Thank you.
Paul, thank you very much. And I think there's some more discussions to be had to formally put in place a steering committee, maybe involving you, John, as well, and other interested members of the community to see how we can drive that project, because it's very exciting, and we're talking about, as Paul said, a world-renowned tourism attraction. I think it's absolutely inspiring. Paul's done some amazing work on this. He's had some numbers run by someone who knows what they're doing, and I think it's just absolutely wonderful, the potential for something like that. To the gentleman down the back. And that's Kerry. Kerry's works with me, and Kerry is Kerry Ridgway of Ridgway Supermarkets in Lawn. So pretty much, oh yeah, and also Dale. And Apollo Bay, of course. So a bit of a local, and in Kerry's day, it wasn't the most expensive supermarket in Australia.
Thank you. My name is Cliff Beatty. I live just across the road here in Three Moore Street. For years now, I've been trying to get the Colour Cutway Shire to do something about bus parking. Talking about toilets, my house has been used as a public toilet. I've had to shift my gate from the back of my house to the front of the house because girls were going up alongside between the house and the fence and using it as a toilet. I went out there one day.
Just up.
I went out there one day and there was two girls up there doing their job, so I yelled out at them, the pants went up that quick. It wasn't funny, and I've had to shift the gate from the back of the house to the front. I've had blokes leaking on my side fence. As I'm sitting there having lunch, we've looked out and there's people along the side fence, because I've got a couple of trees there, standing between the tree and the fence, watering the fence. Yeah, I don't think that's very acceptable. The other problem we have is if it's raining and the bus drivers are not there, they come and stand under my carport. I've asked them to leave, but because they can't talk Australian, they just laugh at me and say, oh, sorry, 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 and eventually they go. Now, I've lived there since 1969. At the moment, I'm that disgusted that I'm very seriously thinking of putting my house on the market and moving out. My niece was the mayor of Colac a few years ago. I was on to her every week to get something done about bus parking.
Is that Lynn?
Yep,
yeah, Lynn.
Okay. And I met you here when you were there last time. I've talked to the bus drivers. They sympathise with me. The only reason now, every day at 11:30, I park my car out in front of my place to stop the buses parking there. The people get off. Now, Tuesdays, when the garbage is on, I've got to sort of protect all the garbage bins because they put their sick bags, the spew bags into the bins that are not supposed to be there, and I've got to take them off and take them back and give them to the bus driver. I'm like a police on the garbage every week, and it's not a very funny and it's not very very nice job.
So I didn't. It's Mr. Beatty.
That's right. I'm
Cliff Beatty. What's your first name?
Cliff.
Cliff. Okay, Cliff. I can't tell you when we talk about toilet facilities how important this issue is, and you have lived and breathed it firsthand. When you don't provide the basic tourism facilities, you suffer the consequences. The same thing is happening at Eastern View. The arch, the beginning of the Great Ocean Road. Tourists are looking at billboards in Shanghai and Beijing, magnificent shots of the Great Ocean Road. The first stop, they get off the bus, they look at the statue. Frankly, I think we could probably do better. And there are no toilet facilities. They are defecating in the bushes and it is absolutely disgusting. So it is fantastic that you've got the mayor, two other councillors and the CEO all here. Can I say in relation to Colac Otway, Colac Otway is a small council trying to cover a very large area. I know the residents of Apollo Bay sometimes feel that they pay very large rates because of their land values and they want to see better bang for the buck, but I think it's testament to the council that they are here and that there is great engagement. They've been great advocates for many projects. So when John talks about my advocacy, there are lots of people who work very hard to drive the investment into the Great Ocean Road and to these other issues. But I think maybe I might even ask Chris or Sue even to briefly respond on these issues, because you've got major issues and they need to be fixed, and they need to be fixed straight away. Because we don't want to see you, Cliff, leave for Apollo Bay. You're an institution, and we need to make sure that your life here in your senior years is enjoyable and you don't have to deal with the sort of stuff you've been dealing with.
I've had quite a few discussions with bus drivers. They told me one day, because they pull up out here and they let the motors run for 10 or 20 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes after they stop, to let them cool down. They start them. I was talking to one bus driver there at Christmas, and they start the bus up. And I said, why do you have to start up so quick before you leave? He said, to get the air conditioner going. And I said, well, you've got the stinking fumes of the bus all coming through my place. We've got to keep the windows closed to keep the fumes out.
All right, Cliff, I might just get Kerry to take the microphone over to Chris, and who can respond.
Yeah, thanks. And I'm sorry to hear about your issue, and you haven't reached out to me personally yet, but that's not the point. We know it's a big issue. Parking, bus parking and parking in general, all the way from Lawn to Apollo Bay, is a big issue. The council has just applied for some money, Sarah, actually, to undertake a comprehensive parking study from Wye River through to Apollo Bay. It's not an overnight fix. I appreciate that. It's a problem that's been talked about for a long, long time. We want to do something about it, and we're going to, but it's not an overnight fix to do it properly. We will discuss perhaps offline about what steps we can take immediately to try and alleviate your situation, but whatever is done has to be done properly and coordinated, in a coordinated fashion, not just for now, but for the next 20 years, because we want these tourists to stop. They are parking in appropriate areas sometimes, such as at your house. We recognise that, and we're trying to do something about it.
Thank you, Chris. Sue, can I just check on that funding application? Is that the community investment stream? So I was talking before about the Building Better Regions Fund, the two streams, the investment stream and the community investment stream. So some money has been applied for from the federal government for a feasibility study to look at a whole rescoping of car parking and bus parking between Wye and Apollo Bay or beyond, the whole way. Okay, well, that is really heartening. So it is great that the council is acting, but it's also terrific, Cliff, that maybe offline you can talk to Chris and Sue and see whether there's anything that we can do, maybe in conjunction with John and the local police, to try and make your life a bit more enjoyable and not having to deal with these sorts of situations. To the gentleman there.
Thank you, Sarah. Nice to see you again. Well, first of all, I've been coming here for 35, 40 years. Just to let say, so I did all of the your tourist centres and everything like that. That one over there, that was back in just a couple of years before the decade came over. And I wrote the book on Cape Otway, and we've got a house out at Cape Volney near Moonlight Head. So I know a bit about the area. I just have wanted to say that Sarah Henderson has been absolutely wonderful in helping me with a project for, because most people don't know, Marengo. And Marengo is French. And it was named by Nicolas Baudin, the French explorer, who came in 1803 and went, after coming and doing Tasmania, up the western coast of Australia. There is no acknowledgement of this man. And this is one of the components that we need to put into the history of this coast. We've already got support from Paris because there's a large group, and they've been doing it for 100 years to remember Baudin. We just, unfortunately, and I won't go into a long talk, but because I give long talks, as you know, for out at the lighthouse, and I wrote The Beacons of Hope, and I did it at the bicentenary and all that. But that's my point is that thank you, Sarah, for what you did, and now it's moving along, and the Shire has been interested on it, and it's a bus that was right on the coast. And we're at Marengo out there, and because the Great Ocean Walk goes right past it. This is all part of the material that could be put along the coast. I did half of the plaques that are already there, and I gave the talk when it opened it out at Princetown. So I thank you again, and I just hope that we can get further support as we move towards making this a place that's got more stories. There are more hidden stories of this coast.
No, it's a great project, and look, I'm delighted to support the project. To the lady in the back row.
Yes, Thanks, Sarah. My name is Libby Riches. I'm here as a private citizen, but I do cultural and environmental heritage work. And I just had an observation. I think, the Great Ocean... The Great Ocean Road is a National Heritage List place. We don't tend to talk about that. I'm always interested when we don't hear it in the tourism promotion material. Under the federal legislation, ideally that place should have a plan of management. In this environment, that plan of management is extremely complex because it's a long, thin site with multiple stakeholders, and all those stakeholders have to have input into the plan of management. But if there was one, we would be able to coordinate works that were in line with the protection of the values for which the road is listed. So when I hear discussion about infrastructure works along the road, I mean, obviously that raises some concerns for me in terms of the fact that those values are meant to be protected. And we could plan for the management of those values within that kind of framework. It would bring the stakeholders to the table working together and understanding what their mutual responsibilities and management actions could be. And I just think that if there's a bit of money and resource on the table to do what would be a complex piece of work, that could really help guide the management of the National Heritage Place as a tourism destination into the future. I just wanted to make that point.
It's a great point, Libby. Thank you. And it is very significant that the Great Ocean Road is listed on the National Heritage Register. If you have a look on my website, there are some particular community grants available for heritage, both projects associated with National Heritage listed parts of Australia, and there's also some other community heritage grants available, and they're open now. So I'd really encourage anyone who's got ideas or suggestions, and particularly for the likes of the Chamber and Council, please have a look at those grants, because one of the hardest things about securing money is how to do it and where to go, but they are open at the moment. So look, it is a great point. I do know that every time Vic Roads does any work on the road, they have to consider the particular restraints and the restrictions, and also the value that the heritage listed road does bring to our region. So it's a really good point, and one that we'll also be making in our report as well. To the lady here.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bryant. I'm just a resident and live at Cape Otway. I suppose my concern is safety. I live at Cape Otway. I drive in every day. I know you've been to Bimby Park and visited out there. I'm just, with the money that you've got, I'm sure and I hope that we can get the road up to a pristine condition, but I suppose it's keeping it in that condition for safety. We live out the Cape Otway Road, and I think anyone who's driven out that road has experienced the state of the road is... the actual surface is terrible, but I'm just more concerned about the people who come out to visit all the areas that are out at Cape Otway, whether it be the National Park, whether it be the Lighthouse, whether it's the camp at Bimby Park, or whether it's to see the koalas. We have... I've written a letter, and I know and now know that we have 5 million people coming down the road, and the Cape Otway Road is like an extension of the the Lighthouse Road is like an extension of the Great Ocean Road. Mm. So I imagine we have, I don't know how many people, but I have come across many near accidents, and I'm sure this is the same on the Great Ocean Road. I don't want there to be a fatality before something happens, either on the Great Ocean Road, there has been fatalities, but particularly the Lighthouse Road. People have nowhere to pull off. The edges are dangerous, they're boggy in winter, and there's just nowhere. So they park in the middle of the road, they park on the bends, they have their doors open, they have their children running around, and they're looking at the trees. And no matter what you try to explain to them, that what they're doing is very dangerous, that they're going to cause an accident, I think they think it's a quiet country road. And it's not an if, it's a when. Mm. Something is going to happen out there, and there's going to be more and more on the Great Ocean Road. So with all of this, I think safety for locals and for tourists is also paramount.
Look, thank you. A great point. And we always talk about upgrading the road for tourism, for local communities and for road safety. And Vic Roads, I know, and I've had lots of discussions It's not just road safety for drivers, but road safety for pedestrians. So if you've got an idea about better pedestrian access, safer access for pedestrians, for drivers, even for motorcyclists, then we're really keen to hear that. The limitation on the Great Ocean Road upgrade, it's confined to the actual Great Ocean Road itself, not to arterial roads, which is a bit challenging, but that we may be able to make the case for it. We certainly have designated separate funding for the Apollo Bay Forest Road, which has been very important, but it is integral, so we will include that and we might even get some more details. On driver safety and international driver safety more generally, I've raised this with the Victorian Roads Minister on numerous occasions. I've written to him again about a week ago because we have lots of issues with international drivers on the wrong side of the road, not educated. I mean, driving on Australian roads is difficult anyway, but this is one of the most challenging roads. I mean, places like Point Defiance, where, as you say, they double park, they've got no idea that cars are coming around. It's absolutely perilous. I mean, I've pulled tourists off the Cape Patton wall and yelled at them to get down. I mean, you need a puff of wind or someone to distract them and away they go over the cliff. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So I have raised this. I do think that this has got to be taken more seriously. Hire cars have got to educate drivers. There's got to be much better signage, much, you know, clearer arrows. We don't want to get sign blindness on the road, but drivers have got to be better educated. I mean, if every hire car that comes down the Great Ocean Road has got big signs all over the dashboard, whatever we have to do, arrows saying stay on that side of the road, it is imperative. Some of the buses are actually coming down here. They're not registered. They're actually coming down here illegally. Down at Eastern View, I'm sure it's happening everywhere. They're parking illegally. It's dangerous. As Cliff said, there's all sorts of disregard for local residents and also for the safety of local residents and pedestrians, but it is a very big issue, so thank you. The gentleman at the back.
Sarah, my name's John Curry. I'm a trustee of the Apollo Bay Health Foundation. The last question raises the issues that I have in that there are 100,000 tourists a day coming down the Great Ocean Road, and there are virtually no after-hours medical facilities here. If there's a serious accident, there is no real accident and emergency facilities available. We had a meeting last Wednesday night of 150 people in Apollo Bay concerned about the general state of care and attention for medical purposes. Now, it doesn't need much of an accident on that road anywhere along here, and there's virtually no other than in Lawn, where there's a GP, and there's a GP here, and we've always got trouble here in getting people to come. There would be a major problem if a tourist bus had a major accident. So whilst it may not be part of the infrastructure as such, I think it is a vital part of infrastructure generally, and anything that you could do to promote this in terms of federal funding or grants, specific grants, would be most helpful.
Thank you. I was not able to come to the meeting on Wednesday night. I had Angus Taylor in town in Geelong, so I wasn't able to get here in time. But I do know that this is a massive issue currently in Apollo Bay. I have made some strong public comments supporting the community on the need to have more GPs in town, staffing overnight care 24/7. It's not acceptable to rely on an ambulance if someone gets sick or needs emergency or accident care overnight, to call an ambulance and expect to be treated in Colac, Warrnambool or Geelong. I have actually just come from a meeting with Ray Nichols and the strategy group that's been formed on this issue. So I met with him at 5 o'clock and have spoken to a number of people about this situation. R-Wave, which is the Rural Workforce Agency Victoria, it's a Commonwealth agency, it was set up to support and get GPs into rural and remote areas of Australia, because fundamentally we've got problems attracting GPs into rural locations, and this is a magnificent place to live, to work, to raise a family, but we sometimes need to make sure there are the incentives in place. So I know there's been an issue with housing. There is some... I mean, I'm sure there are different views, but I know there is concern about whether the doctors here have been given enough support. And I've had this meeting just, as I say, at 5 o'clock tonight. I am meeting, I'm having a, because I'm in Canberra next week, but I'm meeting with, by telephone, with Megan Carl, the CEO of R-Wave, to talk to her about what further support we can provide. I've been dealing with the Minister's, Health Minister's Office, Greg Hunt, and also David Gillespie, who's the Assistant Health Minister. So I won't be letting this go. So while we don't have the magic tricks up our sleeve to bring people here, I mean, we need to do everything we can. And there is a lot of money, actually, that's gone into the rural GP workforce to support people coming to rural communities. So we won't let this go. We'll do everything we can as a federal government to give you the support that you need and you absolutely deserve.
Hi there, it's Tim Cobb from Skeens Creek. Just picking up on one of the questions that John Mariner raised earlier, and also the talk about the walk and the safety. There was a beautiful shot in the video of somebody riding their bicycle down from Pirates Cove towards the Wild Dog Bridge. Now, of course, as we know, when you get to the Wild Dog Bridge, there's nowhere to cross if you're a pedestrian, and if you're a cyclist, you've got to cross in front of the buses and trucks and people on the wrong side of the road. We know there's been... well, I know of at least one death there in the last little while. Can we have a pedestrian bridge or pedestrian cycle bridge at Wild Dog Creek and Skeens Creek, please, like there is everywhere else further along the Great Ocean Road, as part of this lot of money?
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for putting that proposal, and you've been a great advocate for what is clearly an important project. So when I had a look at the wish list and the projects that haven't been able to be funded under the current Great Ocean Road program, your particular project just fell off the list. But I understand that it's looking pretty good for the next time round. Because I know if you look at Separation Creek and the difference it's made connecting Wye and Separation Creek with a bridge and a safe pedestrian crossing, those two communities, and particularly after the unbelievable pain that they have suffered and the residents have suffered there, feel now connected. They have a bridge, they have a safe pedestrian crossing. So, Tim, your project is already on Vic Roads' list. I've spoken to Mark Kaliba, who's the regional director of Vic Roads. It's getting a lot of attention, and I'm very, very confident that we will see some improvements, and hopefully that will be included in the next round. But we'll advocate very hard for that.
Hi, everyone. I'm Trish Goodlett, manager at Cape Otway Light Station. More importantly, I'm a mother of three young boys in the secondary school here. And I think it's important when we look at the future that to know that the children are not happy in this community with the impact of the tourism at the moment. So we have a town that's designed for 2,000 people, and we see an influx of up to 100,000, with 20,000 staying here in peak periods. They see what our residences with the buses see. They see the rubbish, the lack of facilities. You know, it's taken a long time for something significant to be built in Apollo Bay. Our surf club, I think, is about 40-something years old. So we're totally under-resourced, and the kids are not respecting what's happening to their town. So they're the future of Apollo Bay. In terms of Lighthouse, I reiterate with Jenny, as we're getting hundreds of thousands of people down that road, the surface is just disgusting. And I have had discussions with you on mobile, so trying to get support there. The light station has a couple of 100,000 people in excess per year, plus the Great Ocean Walk traffic. There is no mobile reception to date. We have the NBN via satellite, which we are now on our second provider, and it crashes every day. So there's not a lot of joy in trying to run a significant tourism attraction.
We've had lots of discussions via Twitter, and I keep calling out on Twitter, supporting your calls, where is Telstra? Our line has gone down again, our internet is down. I know you've had some really challenging issues, and while you're, of course, in a more remote part of the region, it's no excuse. Every single Australian will be getting the NBN, and it's now considered to be fundamental infrastructure. So just on Cape Otway, Cape Otway is one of the 18 mobile base stations that we have funded under our Black Spots program. So as I mentioned, Apollo Bay is coming online, the construction starts soon, and Cape Otway, I'm waiting for a final construction date. So that is also hopefully underway, construction beginning this year, which will make a huge difference obviously for tourism but also for your business. The NBN satellite, I was speaking with Bill Morrow a couple of weeks ago. He gave us a briefing because I'm constantly fighting with Telstra and the and NBN Co. They have had some problems with the satellite. There's no two ways about it. It's dropping out. There are problems with maintaining a continuing connection. There's a lot of work going on at the moment. I think some of the providers aren't buying enough capacity, and that's also happening with fixed line and fixed wireless to some degree, but it is something that there's a lot of work going on to try and remedy. So I do hear you loud and clear. We also hear you on the road, the Lighthouse Road, which obviously I know that road. It's full of potholes. It's dangerous. It's narrow. You've got tourists doing all sorts of unpredictable things. I mean, I was driving along the Great Ocean Road just near Kennet River, and you've got tourists stopping in the middle of the road in their cars on blind corners because there's a koala that crosses the road. So, you know, that is just absolutely crazy, and we will be putting Lighthouse Road on the agenda as well. I've just noticed Richard Reardon, the state member for Polwarth, has joined us. Richard's also been at the same meeting that I was at talking about the issues with doctors in Apollo Bay, but welcome to you, Richard. Love you to say a few words if you wanted to just, any time you wanted to say something, please, you're more than welcome. Okay, how we go? And I'm conscious of time because I don't want to hold you too long. To the lady, just the second last row.
Excuse me, guys. Thank you. Is it
here? Cynthia McLean from Skeens Creek North. I've only been here a few weeks. And I've noticed the few picnic tables that are around, none of them have any shade cover, and there are some nice simple, like tin roof that you might put over them just mm-hmm. for sun and rain. Mm-hmm. So and the other thing is with the walk that's proposed from Warren Pond to the Apostles, my partner and I are keen cyclists, and we've done lots of rail trail. We've done one from Mansfield was our most recent one. We've stayed overnight at different places, eaten out, spent quite a bit of money. There's also a little company that picks you up with your bikes and takes you back from where you started. And I thought if the walk trail could be combined with a cycle trail, cyclists are very keen. We're not all racers. We're tourers, and we do like to set out for many days at a time. So there's a lot of potential for overnight stays, eating out, all those things. And someone who'd like to set up a business transporting people, if they just do it one way, it's just another idea.
That's a great idea, Cynthia. Where did you come from?
Oh, well, I'm from WA.
So. Great decision. You're in God's country now.
Thank you.
Well, welcome, and that's a great idea. I mean, we obviously have the Cadell Evans Great Ocean Road big cycling event. Not enough of the Great Ocean Road, frankly, is on the route. Only a tiny slither. But look, that's now getting worldwide audiences. We're seeing slightly less Melbourne signs, which has been an issue in that road race, but there's a very big cycling culture, and of course Cadell being a cycling icon has also helped to really drive that. So that's really inspiring, and thank you.
Right. Yeah, my name's Jim Dwyer. We're a resident here of Apollo Bay. And all I'm saying is that I think that the pedestrian crossings that we have in the township itself, one of them should be a red light job, because my vision is very low and I have nearly had an accident twice and I've been halfway across the pedestrian crossing. So that's just a suggestion. And I spoke to Vic Roads and they said no, that it's got to be funded, and that was about it. So, and I've spoken to the police and they said, oh, have you got the registration number of the car? I said, oh, my sight, I'm lucky to see the car. So I think it would be a good idea to have a red light down through the township there, because the traffic is just getting to be unbelievable.
Sorry, I didn't... Jim, is it Jim?
Yeah.
Jim...
Jim Dwyer.
Malloy?
Dwyer.
Oh, Dwyer, I'm sorry. Sorry, Jim.
Yeah.
Look, these sorts of issues are very, I have to say, very contentious. We've seen, not something that I supported, but we've seen pedestrian lights being established in Anglesey, along with some improvements to the roundabout, which has improved traffic flow, but now cars are coming in, they're stopping at the red light, even when, you know, there's no one crossing, which is always a problem too. And then they're travelling another 100 metres and they're stopping at the roundabout. So it's... Well, yes. And then, of course, Fairhaven has the underground car, the underground crossing. And I always get a bit distressed when I see the surf lifesavers crossing the road when they've got their underground crossing. But it is... I mean, you're right, pedestrian safety is very important. There are lots of... There are quite a few blind spots coming along the main street, Jim. But as I say, one is funding, and two is trying to actually work out from a modelling perspective whether that would actually benefit traffic flow. And sometimes pedestrian lights can actually impede traffic flow. So, but it's something that we'll certainly raise with Vic Roads, and we'll put it we'll certainly put it to Vic Roads. To the gentleman down the back.
Yeah, g'day, Neil McGain. I'll declare my allegiance to the Australian Workers Union. I work for the Otway Coast Committee, and last couple of days I've been doing repair job on the skate park, which is 16 odd years old and is in a drastic need of rebuilding. It was a fairly minimalist build in the first place. And the kids of Apollo Bay are often talking to me, because I'm working on the foreshore regularly and talking to tourists, that we need a lot of money actually put into the Apollo Bay foreshore to provide not just for the local kids, but the example of an Italian tourist yesterday who, in her 20s, who was a professional skater, and was laughing at the state of our skate park. Mm. Now, that's major money to do a decent job, like if you'd see in other places, a much better quality. And the other thing that kids bring up is the general lack of things to do. There's a playground, but they say we want, you know, some basketball or some fitness courses. The functions that go on the foreshore, it's in a pretty rundown state, uneven surfaces, poor drainage. When it rains, like the seafood festival, it was a bit of a mud bath. So not just for the locals, but for the tourists that bring in a lot of money to this town, we need to spend more money on the infrastructure for tourism and to provide for the local kids as well. As much as I'd like to get stuck in about the poor penalty rates that I'll be get paid tomorrow for picking up the rubbish on the foreshore, I'll leave
I
that
would have
go.
Been so disappointed but if you hadn't mentioned that.
I'll leave that go, but it's really about providing for the kids of this town and the visitors who regularly come, and I speak to them, you know, young and old on a regular basis. There's not enough facility and recreation opportunity for the multiple visitors we have. Thank you.
Neil, thank you very much. I'll start with the really contentious one first. Luckily, there probably aren't too many kids, but there are a number of kids in this town who work under awards and deals under EBAs, like the kids at McDonald's who get no penalty rates on the weekend as a result of the deals that have been struck between the shoppies union and between some of the big employers like Coles, Woolworths and also McDonald's. So the reality is that there are many workplaces where penalty rates have been stripped out of weekends altogether, and that is an issue. But on the stuff that we're really talking about tonight, you've raised a really good point. And I think a lot of work should be done on beautifying the foreshore here. I mean, you have the most magnificent beach. It's protected, it's beautiful, you've got an incredible foreshore, but it really does need some TLC. And we saw what's possible in Lawn. I mean, a lot of money has been spent on the Lawn foreshore. They've got a great skate park there, a great park. And I agree, it does look run down. And that's why we've got these funds, the Building Better Regions Fund, even the Community Investment Stream. We would really welcome, and also from a state level, and it's great Richard's here tonight to hear about these issues as well, we would really welcome some proposals, and through Otway Coast and others, to work up these proposals to fund some of this infrastructure, because the point's already been made tonight, kids absolutely have to have the right facilities to be engaged, to have fun, and so they don't go off the rails and they start looking for, you know, in all the wrong places for recreation. So whether it's proper bike paths, whether it's parks, whether it's skate parks. I mean, the one at Torquay, we actually funded one at Torquay, the Banyul Wari Park in North Torquay. I mean, that skate bowl is unbelievable. It's very dangerous. It's world class, but it is possible to fund this infrastructure, but we need to get these plans and we need to get the focus and the drive. So thank you, Neil. I think you've raised a really good point. Kez? It's 20 past seven, so we probably look to wrap up in the next six or seven minutes.
My name's Emily. I'm from the Dolphin Apartments. Previously at the public meeting regarding the landslips, there was talk of a one governance for the entire Great Ocean Road that incorporated a lot of the committees, mm-hmm. because I know within, just in Apollo Bay, there's the Coastal Committee, there's the Chamber of Commerce, there's a lot of levels to get through to actually get anything done. Just wondering if there's any progress on that, if there's any more talk of that, mm-hmm. because the Great Ocean Road is major, it's 240 kilometres long, there is too many people wanting little bits of pieces. So is there going to be one governance? Is that something that we're working towards?
That was mentioned earlier by John. The Great Ocean Road Authority, I think, is getting a lot of traction because it's Delp, it's Otway Coast, it's Gawk, it's Parks, it's Council. You know, the Commonwealth can play some role as well, but there are multiple land management agencies, and the Eastern View situation there I mentioned before with the lack of toilets there, I mean, they're dealing with about half a dozen different agencies just in a tiny plot of land. So this is getting momentum. This was actually mentioned at our city deal meeting we had the other day. Elaine Carbines, who's the CEO of G21, which represents all the five councils, the state is actually having some discussions about this. It's really not a Commonwealth matter. We don't have any constitutional capacity to intervene, unlike, say, the Great Barrier Reef Authority, which is in Commonwealth waters, ostensibly. It's very much a matter for the state, but I really support it. I think done properly with the right governance and the right framework, it can be really positive, but it's also got to be properly funded as well. That's also the challenge. But it is getting traction, in short. Just
because you've spoken already, someone else has spoken.
Okay. Sorry, my name's Margie. I've got a place in Skeens Creek and I flip between, here in Melbourne constantly. And some of these things just sound like simple management issues, to be honest, and there's a lot of major things. I would just like to say, especially in regard to medical, ongoing appropriate medical presence here in Apollo Bay, this is a constant thing that happens constantly in rural communities all over Australia. And what I'd like to know is on a federal level, Commonwealth level, maybe it's time they started subsidising the actual amazing insurance that
GPs actually have to pay, medical practitioners have to pay. I'm not a medical practitioner. I have been a nurse in the past, so I'm very well aware of those horrendous costs. So I think for small communities, they've got to actually understand sometimes the economic viability for GPs in small communities is a really difficult thing. There's massive costs, and I think federal can certainly help with that. And sorry, the other thing I was just actually going to say was in regard to with the parking, I've certainly travelled pretty extensively around the world, and I don't do big tourist buses as a rule. If I go somewhere, it's normally something small. But in a lot of countries around the world, there's designated parking spots. People get dropped off. That's where they get picked up. Buses go off, are parked elsewhere. And there is no... people adhere to it. So, you know, I think some of those sort of... sometimes putting restraints and regulations on some of these companies who are making a lot of money probably doesn't hurt.
That's a really great suggestion, actually, and it might well be a good immediate solution for some of the issues that Cliff has raised, where buses can pick up and drop off, but they can't sit there idling with their engines going, spewing out fumes and all the rest of it for 20 minutes, half an hour or more. So that might be something that council could actually consider, and particularly addressing some of the immediate issues in Apollo Bay. There's no doubt it's absolutely fundamental that in a town like Apollo Bay there must be 24/7 care by GPs. We've actually introduced this whole new rural workforce agency, so it's a whole new Commonwealth agency. We've got legislation before the House of Reps. I think it's been passed by the House of Reps. I say I think, I know, because I passed it. I helped to pass it. It's now in the Senate to appoint a commissioner to actually advocate for some of these rural medical workforce issues. There is a lot of subsidy available through, I think there's around about $600 million in total, and I'd be happy to distribute for anyone who wants to. I could distribute a bit of a report. So please make sure you leave your email address, because I'll actually, along with that, perhaps also include some details about R-Wave. So there's a lot of focus, and that's under David Gillespie, who's actually a specialist doctor. He's a new member of Parliament, well, relatively new. He was elected in 2013. And so he's actually introduced that whole focus on driving the rural workforce. So I'm happy to give you some more information about that. But it is absolutely fundamental, and I've committed and I'll continue to drive whatever we can do at a federal level to give your community the support that, as I say, it needs and it absolutely deserves.
Hi, Sarah. Jane Gross. I usually talk to Sarah about swimming pools. I won't do that tonight. It doesn't seem particularly relevant. The harbour is... you're aware of the status with the harbour at the moment. But I just wanted to pick up on a few things that I'm hearing tonight, and that is about, and also from the video that Joe showed, you know, we're sort of set at making Apollo Bay a destination rather than people driving through. This is something that I was partially involved with the Destination Action Plan. We're also trying to respect our community and retain community and keep that balance between tourism and community. And it just seems to me that, you know, we really need to be very careful not to have these two big targets when we've already got a lot of tourists. And from what we're saying tonight, we're not really coping with them that well. Like, we don't have enough toilets. Mm. We don't have bus parking where we should have. You know, we're not ready to grow too quickly, in my opinion. And I fear that for the community, and I fear that for our resources. And I think it's something that really needs to be looked at carefully and addressed very quickly. And also I wanted to make the point, and I suppose Neil bringing up the skate park, because that's something that I actually took years to happen, but we made it happen, is you get this infrastructure, you achieve the capital for a project, but who maintains it? Who does the ongoing maintenance? Build new toilets. Who's going to clean the toilets? Who's going to make sure there's toilet paper in there? Whose responsibility is that? It's very easy for, and no, you know, with all due respect, it's very easy for federal and state government to provide money through funding through grants, but there's never ongoing maintenance funding built into that. And I just think they're things that we should consider in this discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, Jane, great point. And you are right, to a large degree, state and federal governments provide funding for infrastructure, but we also, of course, provide recurrent funding through our grants directly to council. Things like the Roads to Recovery program is also a direct grant for ongoing maintenance. But it is a big challenge, and I think the numbers for even the Apollo Bay maintenance of the toilets here, it's just, it's astronomical. I think it's well in excess of 100,000 or even, look, it really is, it's a real problem. But I guess what we were saying at the beginning of the meeting, it's fundamental. And I don't think there is really, I don't think there is actually a lot of focus on growth. I think this program and all the other things that we're discussing, that the focus has got to be on providing the basic tourism infrastructure for the tourists who are already here, like dealing with the buses, the toilets, the parking, the signage, because we are getting enormous growth. I mean, the growth has been astronomical, and I agree, we're not currently coping. That's why we've driven that funding into the road. That's why we're having these meetings. And we're not going to give up. We've got these funds, we've got engagement, but we've got to keep that momentum going. And Jane, as you know, just on swimming pools, I'm passionate about swimming pools here and in other parts of the coast. Let's not mention Torquay. But there is, I mean, that harbour project is just, it is so exciting. I do know that there is a lot of interest from developers in Apollo Bay. I think it's very positive. I can't say too much, but there is, there were, I think, about 50 high net worth Chinese in Geelong just this week or so, Fortune 500 companies coming in looking at the opportunities. And I think I get a sense that things are just about to really happen. But the points being made, we've got to make sure that development is right, it's appropriate for our kids, for our community. To keep the integrity of the heritage. This, after all, is the world's largest war memorial. Let's not forget that. Built by our incredible diggers in the wake of the end of World War I. So we've got to balance that as well, because we've just live in the most amazing part of the world, and we've got to make sure that development is balanced, sensible, measured and right for our communities. Quick final comment.
Is a toll ever being brought up? Like, we do all these things. Can we put in a toll? I don't know. I've been to Byron. You now have to pay $4 an hour to park to go to the beach. I complain about it, but I go. I don't know. Do the buses pay?
The buses do pay a levy.
The upgrade of all these facilities, is that ever being talked about, sister?
Look, the buses do pay a levy. No, 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 no. You're not advocating that. So the buses do pay a levy through the state. There are many unregistered or buses that are operating not within the law in terms of they're not paying the levy. I'm not a supporter of a toll, I have to tell you. I think this is an incredibly important icon, and it is the responsibility of state and federal governments to maintain this, drawing on our budget and our resources. But certainly we can do more with the buses. We want to make sure that parking is cheap and affordable, and that you don't suffer because you do live in a tourism town. So it is about that right balance. The question was, can buses be made to have their own toilets? I don't know that there's that requirement, but look, as we've talked about tonight, that the toilet situation is really important and it's fundamental to the tourism industry. Now, before we go, I just wanted to see whether Richard wanted to say anything at all. Would you like to make a couple of comments, Richard, before we wrap up?
I'd just make the one comment, and I guess the issue that came up much when the road issue was on mid last year was around the how we're going to pay for it. And the last point tonight on the toll, while we can think of a whole bunch of other words other than toll, there are different ways that as our local communities we can think about this dilemma. And so the thing I think when we're trying to look at the way what we want better foreshores, we want more toilets, we want safer roads, we want congestion to work better and so on so we can maintain our quality of life. We have to keep in perspective that we've got 4 million people from around the world domestically and internationally coming into our region. There's 12, 13, 1,500 people that live here. There's 10,000 in Colac. You know, all up the Colac-Otway Shire, for example, is only 22,000 people, covering a huge area, most of which is national park and unrateable. We have to accept how are we going to make this work, how are we going to pay for it, and how are we going to give people an experience that they will want to go back overseas, return back to China, return back to Europe, return back to America, and say they had a fantastic experience. For those of us lucky enough to have gone overseas, you can't look at an old, fallen down, collapsed wall in the back blocks of London without paying £10 to look at it. You can't go up a tower without paying £10. International tourism expects that's just part of it. People can't believe that they get this whole experience and we're giving them something for free, but we're not giving it anywhere near the quality that we could. I mean, if you go at 2:30 in the afternoon down to the 12 Apostles, you can't see it for car. I mean, I've been there a few times. The Great Ocean Road's down to less than one lane. Kids and people and stuff zigzagging all over the place. It's really not a good experience. It's not a good look. And if we're not careful, we will kill the goose that lays the golden egg for us around here if word gets out that you're getting a second-rate international experience. So we do need to think about it and we need to be creative. And I'll leave this with one thought that I think as communities we need to start thinking about and how it would work best for us. But if you just imagine on we'll call them the international one-day blowfly visitors that just swarm through the place and are gone again and probably never coming back here ever again, but hopefully they're going to tell their friends about it. But if you think about those people, if you had an economic model that said if you want the premium experience which gets you to Apollo Bay at lunchtime, you can stop here and then get to the 12 Apostles at 2:30, you create a fee in that experience, let's say $50 or $60. That's the premium fee. For those that just want a selfie, they're going to be asleep on the bus. They don't care about the rest of it. They don't care about the beach. They just want the selfie shot. You could charge them, say, $20, and they'll go the back road through Colac, through our other little hinterland towns, which will deliver benefit for them. It'll get a whole bunch of people off the road, so we're not having to have the Great Ocean Road congested with people that are asleep in their cars, not even looking at it. And we can keep the experience better for those, particularly those that want to come and stay in Apollo Bay, who want to come here for 2 or 3 days and experience the place and have a great experience. Because they're our high-value visitors. They're the ones we want to look after, and they're the ones that will deliver the jobs and opportunities down the track to our communities. So I think we need to really think laterally and cleverly about the different types of tourists we have here and the different experiences that we want to give them. So I'll just leave people with that thought, but I think it's something our communities need to have a conversation and a discussion about. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks. Richard, thank you very much. Look, on that note, I want to thank you all very much for coming here tonight. If you haven't had a chance to say your mind, please go onto my website. You can email me with your suggestions. I want to thank John for being here, also to Chris Potter, to Joe, to Stephen and to Sir Wilkinson from the Shire for being here and to all of you. You're all, there was some comment made before about, you know, we're just ordinary. Well, no one's ordinary. We're all special and it's a great honour to represent you and to do the best job that I can to make sure that you're properly represented in Canberra. So as I mentioned, this is going to be compiled in a report. It will be on my website and distributed and provided to both VicRoads and my federal minister. And I really look forward to delivering what I think will be a really significant $50 million upgrade, the next swathe. But perhaps more importantly, I look forward to the other opportunities that will come our way through the various funding opportunities, but most importantly through your ideas, your drive, your momentum, and your commitment to this wonderful community. Thank you very much, everyone.
The program you have just heard is an unedited live recording of the Great Ocean Road Summit hosted by Sarah Henderson, Federal MP for Corangamite, held at the Apollo Bay Bowls Club on the 17th of March. Apollo Bay Radio, Apollo Bay Community website, and all their volunteers do not endorse the views expressed in this live, unedited recording. It has been recorded and replayed as a public community service for those unable to attend.